Welcome back to AL's Geography Corner. Today, we'll be taking a look at the Kingdom of Belgium, a country well known for its significance in the European Union and for its confusing regional language divides. But to help explain things better, I have a special guest this week, so stay tuned until the end of the main segment for an exclusive interview with a Canadian expat living in Belgium. Now, without further ado, let's get started with the etymology of Belgium. The etymology of Belgium is incredibly simple. Its name is derived from the Belgae, a confederation of Celtic tribes that lived in an area between the Rhine and the English Channel in the earliest centuries BCE. And that's it. Moving on. The flag of Belgium is a vertical tricolor of, from left to right, black, yellow, and red. The colors were taken from that of the Duchy of Brabant's coat of arms, with the colors representing the red lion of Hainaut, Luxembourg, and Limburg, the yellow lion of Brabant, and the black lion of Namur and Flanders. This flag had an extremely odd length-to-width ratio of 15 to 13. And now, for the coat of arms. Strap yourselves in, folks, because Belgium not only had an extremely complex coat of arms, but also two other coat of arms as well. As they add on to each other, I'll start with the lesser version, then add on to it for the other two. The lesser version of Belgium's coat of arms features a shield most prominently. On this shield is a yellow lion with red claws upon a black background. Resting atop the shield is a royal crown of Belgium, and encircling the shield is the grand collar of the Order of Leopold. Behind the shield are two crossed scepters, a hand of justice, and a lion. Finally, beneath all is a red banner bearing the national motto, Unity Makes Strength, in whichever language is necessary, as Belgium has primarily three spoken languages. Now, the middle version of the coat of arms is a lot larger. The previous coat of arms is the centerpiece still, but now it is flanked by a lion on either side, each supporting the shield with one paw and holding aloft a flagpole bearing the flag of Belgium in the other paw. The crown has been moved up slightly from atop the crown, and a golden helmet is placed between the two. Behind all of this is a large cloak, red on the outside and white with black spots on the inside, and with a golden trim. Atop all of this is one final, larger crown of Belgium. But if you thought this was the end, nope. There's still one higher level of the coat of arms, only used in the most official of circumstances. The greater version of the Belgian coat of arms features all of the elements from the middle version, with the addition of 9 banners atop the cloak, each one being the banner of one of the Belgian provinces in 1837. From left to right, they are Antwerp, West Flanders, East Flanders, Liège, Brabant, Hainaut, Limburg, Luxembourg, and Namur. I'm sorry if I butchered any of those. And after all that, we finally finished with the Belgian coat of arms. So now, on to the history. Belgian history begins to come into its own around the year 1477, when the Burgundian rule of the Low Countries ended with the death of Charles the Bold and his daughter's marriage to the Archduke of Austria, and the region was effectively split into still closely tied northern and southern regions, with the south roughly containing what would become Belgium and Luxembourg. The Archduke's grandson would eventually end up becoming the King of Spain, as Charles I in 1516, and Emperor of the Holy Roman Empire as Charles V in 1519. In 1555, Charles V abdicated the Netherlands to his brother, who 1 year later would be the crowned King Philip II of Spain. Much discontent was sown throughout the Netherlands under Spanish jurisdiction, leading to the 1567 revolution and the dissolution of the union between North and South. War resumed in 1579, and the Spanish commander took control of the south with the recapture of Antwerp in 1585. However, the north refused to give in, and refused to bow to the Spanish crown. In 1598, Philip II granted the Netherlands to the Archduke of Austria, but the north remained stalwart, and in 1609 the Archduke was forced to sign a truce with the newly established Dutch Republic. He would die 12 years later, the same year that the war restarted. In 1648, the war ended with much territory being lost. In 1700, the Spanish Habsburgs came to an end, and a war with France 13 years later led to the Austrian branch of the Holy Roman Empire taking over present-day Belgium and Luxembourg. Despite the increased freedoms, the South was fraught with economic failure, made even worse by the French occupation from 1744 to 1748 during the War of Austrian Succession. However, after the Austrians lost control of the South to France, they were greeted with absolutely no autonomy. However, after Napoleon was defeated, Great Britain decided to reconnect Belgium with the rest of its former territory in the north, creating the Kingdom of the Netherlands. The North and South had grown too different over the years apart, however, and thus the South rebelled, leading to its independence in 1831. The country remained much the same until 1885, when the King Leopold II obtained the Congo Free State in Africa for himself, now known as the Democratic Republic of the Congo. In 1908, the Congo Free State was formally annexed to the Belgian government, rather than merely being in the king's pocket. Despite being neutral and refusing passage to German troops, Belgium, along with Luxembourg, was invaded in August 1914, with Belgium falling a mere 2 days after Luxembourg. However, the troops that remained in western Flanders never surrendered, and fought on until the Great War's end in 1918. After the war's end, Belgium received a mandate to a region known as the Rwanda-Urundi, now the two countries of Rwanda and Burundi, which had been captured from Germans during the war. However, on the whole, Belgium was left economically devastated after the First World War, only made worse with the invasion of the Low Countries in 1940 during the opening of World War II. 18 days later, the Belgians were forced to surrender, the government fleeing and the king being taken prisoner. In 1944, the country was liberated, and the remarkably saved port of Antwerp became the biggest Allied port for the rest of the war. In 1960, Belgium relinquished control of its African possessions, as it could no longer afford to hold onto them. And since then, Belgium has primarily continued on its course as a hub for European unity. So now with that done, let's talk about the demographics of this nation. Belgium has a population of around 11.5 million people. Of these, around 53.6% are Flemish Belgian, Flemish being a dialect of Dutch, 36.4% French-speaking Belgian, 1.6% Italian, 1.2% being French, another 1.2% Dutch, 0.9% German-speaking Belgian, 0.7% Moroccan, and the remaining 4.4% is comprised of all other ethnic groups. Religion-wise, around 60% of the population is Roman Catholic, 31% is non-religious, 4% is Muslim, 2% is Protestant, 1% is Jewish, and the remaining 2% is made up of all other religious affiliations. In regards to settlement patterns, Belgium is extraordinarily urban by all standards, with an astounding 98% of the population living in urban environments. Belgium is world-renowned for its famous architecture, especially in cities such as Bruges, Antwerp, and Ghent. The currency in use is the euro, the internet top-level domain is .be, cars drive on the right side of the road, the Type C and E power outlets are in use, the national motto is Unity Makes Strength in Dutch, French, and German, and the national anthem is La Brabanton, or the Brabantian. So now, with that covered, let's move on to the physical geography of Belgium. Belgium is a relatively small country, comprising around 11,800 square miles, or 30,700 square kilometers. Of this, around 6.5% is water. Belgium is also a very low-lying country, similar to its northern neighbor. The country's highest point is only 2,277 feet, or 694 meters above sea level, located in the Ardennes Range in the south of the country. The central region is mainly made up of vast plains and plateaus. Many rivers split this country into pieces, accompanied with an abundance of man-made canals. The temperature stays relatively moderate all year round, with highs around 71 degrees Fahrenheit or 22 degrees Celsius in the summer, and lows around 32 degrees Fahrenheit or 0 degrees Celsius in the winter, with a year-long average of 50 degrees Fahrenheit or 10 degrees Celsius. Belgium is dotted with the remnants of a formerly gargantuan deciduous forest that used to cover nearly the entire country, which has now been cut to a fraction of its former majesty. As with the flora, much of the fauna has also been severely reduced in population, with most of the remainder living in the mountainous south. Amongst these are boars, deer, wildcats, and pheasants. So let's end this part off with the political boundaries and foreign relations of Belgium before the interview. Belgium is bordered by four other countries: the Netherlands in the north, Germany in the east, Luxembourg in the southeast, and France in the south and west, as well as the border with the North Sea in the northwest. The country's capital and largest city is Brussels, which has its own unique province, the Brussels Capital Region, one of 11 Belgian provinces. The others are Antwerp, East Flanders, West Flanders, Flemish Brabant, and Limburg in Flanders, as well as Hainaut, Liège, Namur, Walloon-Brabant, and Luxembourg, the region, not the country, and Wallonia. And as that's about it, let's cover the foreign relations of this nation before concluding with our exclusive interview. Now, Belgium is an incredibly unity-promoting country on the world stage. is home to the headquarters of 3 of the 7 primary divisions of the European Union and was one of the founding members, and in fact is home to the headquarters of the entire European Union. Belgium is also a member of NATO, whose headquarters it is also home to. Belgium is also obviously part of the United Nations. As for its closest allies, those would likely be the other two countries comprising Benelux, the Netherlands and Luxembourg, although ties with the UK are also quite strong given that they played a huge role in guaranteeing this nation's independence. And with that, let's end the main portion here and go to the interview. Today we have a special guest with us here, Mr. René Laporte. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is René Laporte. I live here in Brussels, Belgium, and I'm in the Canadian Armed Forces in the Canadian military. We've been here for almost 1 year, married, and have 2 teenage girls.
So how exactly did you find yourself in Belgium as a member of the Canadian military, if I may ask?
Sure. So we have, there's an organization here called NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Canada's a founding member, and we have military members here that work at the Canadian delegation at NATO. So I represent Canada at NATO, and we have positions here for Canadian military folks, and I was lucky enough to be able to find a position here.
Ah, I see. That's very interesting. So I'm guessing this must have been a big deal. Can you tell us something that was a huge change in your life moving to Belgium from Canada?
Sure. So I think the biggest thing here was, I guess maybe 2 things. One is, oddly enough, is just everyday interaction and shopping and being able to have everyday conveniences. So in North America, you know, there's a lot of big box stores, things like, you know, Walmart and Costco and Home Depot and things like that, where here it's a lot more specialty stores. So you don't necessarily have like the big convenience of just being able to go to one place and getting things that you want. So it's actually been, if we want like a really specific thing or we want to go buy something, you know, you may end up going to a whole bunch of different stores or trying to find a store that sells that thing. So that was actually a really strange change that we didn't expect. And also the language here is, language barrier is very challenging. So there are 2 official languages here in Belgium, Dutch and French. So I speak a little bit of French, but my family doesn't speak French or Dutch. So it's been challenging, I think, for all of us, because not only are the official languages, you can go to different parts of the country and they only speak Dutch or they only speak French. And then Brussels is very unique because there are Dutch and French areas within Brussels as well. So you could go to one store and they only speak Dutch, and then you could go to a different store and they only speak French. So, you know, grocery shopping has been really challenging. I've been using Google Translate a lot just to try to pick up normal foods that you'd expect to find, but are maybe unable to read the label. So it's been kind of a strange thing we didn't expect, that was a huge change.
On the subject of language, I heard that a small population of Belgium speaks German, and I was wondering, from the perspective of someone living there, how prevalent is that, if at all?
So in Brussels, it's not as prevalent, but if you go to the eastern side of Belgium, because we border Germany, the closer you go to Germany, there is a lot more German speaking. So a lot of border towns between Germany and Belgium that you go in there and all of the signs start to become printed in German. So and Belgium's unique in that way because it borders Luxembourg, Germany, France, and the Netherlands. So you've got French, German, and Dutch that are really, depending on which direction you go, there's a lot more language differences as you move away from Brussels. So yeah, I'd say German is definitely, maybe not so much in the capital, but as you move closer to Germany, you see a lot more German signs and meet a lot more German speaking people.
That's really interesting. That's not something you'd see here in North America.
No, not at all. No, I would say that's I would say because NATO is here, and also the headquarters for the European Union is also in Brussels. So there are, you know, hundreds of different languages that are spoken all over the city. So you could be walking down the street and hear and easily hear 4 or 5 different languages. You know, our neighbors speak are English and from the United States, and the embassy for Kosovo is down the street. And so it's definitely a unique spot because of all the different countries that are coming here for both the European Union and also NATO.
That sounds extremely unique.
I definitely didn't expect it to be such a mixed population of people here.
So, can you tell us something positive you felt living in Canadian in Belgium? Because it sounds like a big hassle moving, but I'm sure that there must be some amazing positives to there. Or have you had anything negative, really, if nothing positive comes to mind?
I mean, tons of positive things here. I think Canadians in general in Belgium, because of this area of the world during the Second World War, there's a big Canadian population here of soldiers. So Europe has a very long memory when it comes to the war. So there's a lot of appreciation for Canadians and especially Canadian military in this part of the world. So we definitely feel that here, kind of just being out and about in Belgium when people find out we're Canadian. Certainly very accepting. And the other thing is being able to travel. So because Belgium borders so many countries, you know, we're an hour and a half drive from France. We're an hour and a half drive from, you know, Netherlands, Germany, or, you know, a couple hours from Luxembourg. So we've had a chance to travel around quite a bit to different countries, and it's been really convenient to be able to, you know, you could take a weekend and just go to Paris or London. So it's been really cool. I wouldn't say any real negative incidents. You know, people here are friendly. Everybody here, you know, is accepting of different people, like I said, because of the different diversity and population here. So nothing necessarily negative. I would say back to the language thing, it's been probably the most challenging, where you can speak English to somebody and they just look at you. They don't speak any English. And like I said, I speak a bit of French. So I've spoken French to people and they just look at me because they only speak Dutch. So that's been probably the most challenging thing. So something really simple, like our heater broke here. So our boiler to heat the hot water in the house, it broke. And the person that came here initially and the person on the phone and all the people you deal with, you know, one might speak French and one might speak Dutch, and someone might show up trying to fix your boiler and they don't speak any English. So that's been probably the biggest challenge.
So how much English do people seem to speak there? Since from what I've heard, English is a somewhat universal language in Europe, but I'd love to hear from the perspective of someone living there.
Yeah, that was really interesting, because before we moved here, that was the message that people were giving us, was like, don't worry, you can live in Brussels and only speak English. And I would say that's probably true of some of the touristy areas in the city, like, and also in Brussels, because Brussels is it's very touristy. So downtown, for example, where there's a lot of tourists, everybody speaks English down there. So if you go into a store, people speak English. But anywhere on the outskirts of even Brussels, you might go into places that don't necessarily speak English at all. So I would say, you know, Europe in general, I've traveled quite a bit through Europe and been to quite a few places over the last 15 years. And I would say that's very true, generally speaking. So if you go to Barcelona or if you go to Paris, people in the tourist areas all speak English. But as soon as you move outside of those areas, it's far less. And Brussels is no exception.
That's really interesting. I would not have expected that.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier that many countries are only half an hour or an hour and a half, drive away. What's it like living in such a small country? Is it any different than living in the massive Canada?
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to be able to, you know, kind of look at a map and see all the places that we're able to travel, where, you know, living in Canada, you could drive an hour and a half and you're still, you know, you're not even close to another city yet. You're like, you're still close to where you just came from. And being able to cross a border and, you know, like I said, go into a place that's very different from the place you live, that's, you know, extremely close. So, you know, an example, over Christmas we went to, there's a lot of outdoor Christmas markets here in this area. So, and it's a really big thing here in Europe. So driving, you know, an hour and a half to Germany to a German Christmas market is, you know, vastly different than a Belgian Christmas market, which is vastly different from a French Christmas outdoor market. So just that one example where you're experiencing, you know, multiple cultures that are all kind of within, you know, half a day's drive, as opposed to Canada or even the United States, where it's a lot more challenging to kind of see a lot of differences. So, I mean, in one day, we had one day where we drove from Belgium to the Netherlands to France and then back to Belgium. So we had, you know, visited multiple countries in a day and also multiple cultures all, kind of all in one day.
Well, speaking of cultural differences, Are there any foods that you've discovered in Belgium that you haven't found in other places that have stood out to you that you'd recommend listeners to try?
Yes. Sure. Belgium's not like a very eclectic place when it comes to food, but it sounds a bit stereotypical, but the French fries here are incredible. Like there's French fry stands everywhere. And it wasn't until we got here that we learned that French fries were actually invented in Belgium, but because the U.S. soldiers that were here would eat them, people spoke French, so they called them French fries. So people think they come from France, but they actually come from Belgium. So Belgians are really proud of the French fries, and also very stereotypical. But the waffles here are incredible. So there's like multiple types of waffles. I mean, there's dozens and dozens of toppings and combinations of waffles that you can get, and they are like really proud of that thing. So the only thing that's a bit different is something called moule frites, and it's like mussels and French fries. So that's a very Belgian dish that you can find pretty much in any restaurant. So nothing really strange that's or like I said, or eclectic that when it comes to Belgian cuisine. But and then the only other thing really that, you know, people in Belgium very, very proud is beer. There's you know, hundreds of different beers here. They're very, very proud of it, and very different. Very, we went to one pub where it was 2,000 different beers in one place. So I'd say those are really the big things that, you know, if you speak to Belgians, they're very proud of that stuff, and kind of a different experience here, despite being so small.
Well, speaking of bars and restaurants, I'm assuming you haven't been able to get out to any. So what really has the quarantine life been like in Belgium compared to your family's life back in Canada?
It's been really different here. We locked down here very, I would say, quickly. So the initial plan here was that bars and restaurants would be closed and cafes. But within a couple days, they discovered they were just going to lock everything down. So it was very extreme here. So we had like 2 days notice, and they basically said, we're going to shut everything down except for grocery stores, pharmacies, banks, and the post office. So those were the only places that were open. So, you know, for example, I talked to my mom who, you know, she was able to go get an oil change and get her winter tires taken off her car. We couldn't do that here. Nothing was open. So that was the biggest thing, was that, you know, all the little stores that you might have open just based on social distancing in Belgium, we completely locked down and you weren't allowed outside of your house. So they were giving tickets to people, you know, who were sitting, you know, you could go for a walk and that was it. But if you sat down at the park, you could get a ticket. If you were driving somewhere that wasn't deemed essential, like the grocery store or to work, you could actually get a ticket. I think they gave 35,000 tickets in quarantine for people here that were breaking the quarantine rules. And then the big thing here is that there are a lot of outdoor markets in Belgium. So every night of the week, you could go to an outdoor market that's selling, you know, they have food and stuff like that. But you can also, you know, they've got not just food like grocery type food, but they've got like food stands. So one of the markets we go to on a Friday night has, you know, has pizza. They have Thai food. They have hamburger stand. They have Somali food. And none of those have been open for, you know, 2 months. So, the Belgians and us included, now that we've integrated a little more, you can kind of feel that difference in being able to go out on a Thursday to with your social network up to a market and just kind of hang around, have a slice of pizza. So that's been probably the biggest difference between being here and being in Canada, where in Canada, you're just kind of staying home. And there's a few things that aren't open and they're asking people to stay home. But here it's been the law. You're not allowed to. And you're also, it's a much more social place than I would say back home, where, you know, you're getting out to the restaurants and markets is much more part of what it's like to live here.
Oh, on a similar note, here in North America, a lot of people seem to be very opposed to the lockdown and undermining it, protesting it. What did the general consensus seem to be there on the lockdowns in Belgium?
We haven't really seen any protests, but what we've seen, it was interesting. I was reading a poll the other day that when the lockdowns first came, it was, I'm going to misquote, but it was something like 85% of people agreed to all of the lockdown rules and regulations that have come And then in the last, I'd say 3 weeks, it's like a 32% approval rate. So people, I think, have been tired of, you know, sitting in their homes and not being able to socialize and not being able to get out and about. And also, it's been huge job loss here. So, you know, millions of folks have lost their jobs because of all the things that have been closed. And so I wouldn't say there's any protests. I wouldn't say that it's, you know, this similar to what we've seen in North America, but people are starting to get a little bit cranky, I would say. But this past week, we had our first the 4th of May, I think, was the first kind of phased relaxation where, you know, on the 4th, people could start going back to work. And then this past Monday, the 10th, I think, the 11th, you know, stores were starting to open again. So we're not going to see restaurants and bars and cafes until June. But, you know, you're starting to see that social aspect where people can get out to, you know, a hardware store or, you know, I think next week people are going to be able to get their hair cut. So I think as they start to relax some of these rules, people are starting to feel a little bit better about it.
As a soldier, what exactly did this lockdown mean for you in particular? Does it affect you any differently?
I would say the biggest thing is that being in the military, they're concerned about the military members, but they're also concerned about being able to continue doing the job, doing the work. So as opposed to maybe just not working or having to go in, really the biggest consideration was putting together a business continuity plan. So if somebody at the delegation got sick, we need to make sure that that job could keep happening, that person's work could still get done. So we ended up taking shifts where we worked from home for a week and then we would go into work for a week. So it was much less about, you know, being concerned about every single individual. And it was much more concerned about being able to have business continuity so that work could keep going, because, you know, it can shut down a store, but you certainly can't shut down, you know, defense of North America or defense of Canada or defense of NATO countries. So that work needs to keep going regardless of whether it's maybe safe or not.
That's an interesting perspective. I wouldn't have thought of that. So since we're all stuck at home right now, dreaming of traveling, what's something about Belgium that you think my listeners should love to see or visit?
I mean, the Brussels, the downtown area is really amazing. So there's a couple things down there, like the Grand Place is always really, really cool to see. It's a huge square that's got some really old buildings kind of around it. And there's, you know, always street performers and food stands and things like that, and restaurants all around that. That's really neat when it comes to Belgium. And then one of the more popular things, it's really, really strange. It's called the Mannequin Piss. It's like a little tiny statue of a boy. He's peeing into a fountain. And for whatever reason, that's become like a really, like a massive tourist attraction here in Belgium. That, you know, is almost one of those things you have to see when you come here. So I mean, I'd say those two places, and just the downtown core of Brussels, being able to walk around and, like I said, grab some fries, have a waffle, sit down at a local pub. Like, really, that's part of like the Belgian experience outside of just kind of being a tourist here. And chocolate, yeah, I was gonna say chocolate's huge in Belgium as well. So it's almost impossible not to go downtown, you know, have some fries, have a waffle, eat some chocolate, grab a beer, and just kind of sit down and chat, be social. That's really part of the Belgian experience here that I would say, you know, if you were going to come and visit here, it's something you wouldn't want to miss.
I see. So speaking of someone else now, how have your kids adapted to the different school system here? And how would it compare back to what they're used to?
We're very fortunate because my kids have been able to go to a private international school here. So it's been extremely different than school back in Canada. It is a North American type system. So it's nothing, you know, from a curriculum point of view, it's very normal. However, because it's an international school, the classes are much smaller. So, you know, anywhere from 15 to 20 students in a class. And the school, of course, because it's a private school, it's very wealthy. So, you know, they've got 3D printers. They've got a huge theater program that, you know, they put on a play that looked like a, you know, Broadway production almost. The teachers are extremely motivated to help, and they, you know, kids falling through the cracks here are very, very, very slim because, you know, not just being a school, it's also a business. They want to make money. And if your kids are doing well, then you'll want to go back. So they have a vested interest in making sure that everybody succeeds. And I think that's the biggest thing. I don't think that teachers in North America or Canada or, you know, have any, it's not that they don't have an interest in seeing kids succeed. I think that they're overwhelmed with number of kids in a classroom, busy work schedule, and it maybe is easier for kids to fall through the cracks, where I think the school system here, especially the private school system at the international school, is it's very, very different, where it's a lot more inclusive and kids have a lot more heat and light on them to make sure things get done.
So just one final question before we end things off. How exactly has your view of Belgium changed from now, from when you first moved there to how it is now?
I would say, it is a very typical European city. So, you know, the architecture, just walking around, the atmosphere feels, it wasn't much different than what I expected when it came to that. But I think the biggest thing was just the diversity of people and languages that were surprising. I think I had the same view that you did, you know, coming here, being able to speak English and functioning, you know, as if we were normal. And it just seems that that's not necessarily the case. I mean, the people are as nice as anywhere I've been, and you know, the city's as beautiful as any European city I've been to. But that when it comes to, you know, diversity of language, it can be actually really challenging. And I didn't expect that before we came here.
And I think that's everything. Thank you so much for joining me.
No worries. Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to AL's Geography Corner. Be sure to stay tuned next week for another episode, and until then, stay safe and stay isolated.